I can teach you how to bewitch the mind and ensnare the senses. I can tell you how to bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death.
This is Snapecast, episode 44 for Monday, June the 1st, 2026. Now copy that down, or our 25th year anniversary episode will be edited and produced entirely by ChatGPT.
Hello and welcome to Snapecast episode 44. It's been a while. I'm Rachel and I'm here with
Becca,
Shannon,
and Megan.
So it really has been a while. In fact, it's been 20 years since this crew and a subset of some other folks who couldn't make it today got together and released our very first episode of Snapecast on June 1st, 2006, back when podcasts weren't even really a thing.
And we're much longer than they are now.
Yeah, things have changed. But we haven't changed in that a bunch of us that met through Snapecast are still friends. We're still snaping. And we thought it would be great to think about this time in Snapecast history and get together for an episode where we can share memories, share snaping, and just be together as Snape fans and squeak. So I thought it would be good to start way back in the day when Snapecast started. And that was a really different time for the internet, because a lot of us who were Harry Potter fans were online and connecting with each other, but social media wasn't the like giant Leviathan it is today. We were on LiveJournal. We were on the Leaky Cauldron message boards. No one was sharing short form video. It was a long threaded text, Web 2.0 style. And there were two Harry Potter podcasts because there just like weren't that many podcasts then. you could probably like count how many there were. And they were kind of like general Harry Potter podcasts.
Yes.
MuggleCast and The Leaky Cauldron.
Not enough Snape. That was the problem.
It was PotterCast.
PotterCast. Yeah. And so we were like, there's just not enough Snape content. We need something that's all Snape all the time. And that became our tagline. how did we get together? I think I posted a call for who is interested in Snaping in a podcast on the Leaky Cauldron message board and on my LiveJournal. Mm-hmm. And we assembled a cast of characters from all over the world, stretching multiple continents. And for the better part of 6 years, Snape together. We weren't like one of those regular podcasts that came out every Monday. Our episodes were never really like the same length, but we were consistent in that we were creative and we were squeeful, and we were all about Snape and inclusive of all types of Snape fans. So I thought we'd look back and just start with like where we were back then. So I mentioned a little bit about me. When I sent out that message saying who wants to Snape, I was in law school. I'm now a lawyer and I've been that for quite some time. I was also living, I think I was living initially in Houston, but then moved to the Netherlands shortly thereafter that. And I was big into, Harry Potter was my first fandom. I was big into Snary, big into vidding. Vidding is not even called vidding. They're called fan edits nowadays. But most of all, like Snape, in any flavor was what made me happy. So what about you all? What do you remember about that time way back 20 years ago?
Oh my gosh.
You know, I also want to give a plug for what made us unique 20 years ago and maybe still today. I think we had the best bumper music. We had really excellent music, right?
Yeah. And excellent talent with Chris, our voice of Snape, who I won't get into the future too much other than saying that I'm going to be moving to London for a job shortly. And Chris is one of the people who is helping me pick where to live.
That's so awesome.
The voice of Snape is an important part of my life.
I still listen to Where's Dumbledore.
What?
His Where's Dumbledore skit.
Yes.
I still listen to it. It's amazing still.
Becca, what were you doing when we started snaping? What was your life like 20 years ago?
Well, I had like a 1.5-year-old at home. I was just doing the stay-at-home mom thing, and that's kind of how I ended up getting into the Harry Potter fandom. I had a lot of time on my hands. Well, not really, but relatively so. Moving to a new state with an infant, there's pluses about it, but it's kind of isolating sometimes. So fandom really became like an outlet for me. So I posted a lot on the message boards, and that's how Rachel found me.
And if I recall correctly, you were a Snape Hermione shipper. Mild. You weren't really a shipper.
No, I was never like I was more see I when we would go to things like the conventions and stuff, I was way more into the the meta aspects of it, like analyzing the story and his character and theorizing and stuff like that, the academic side of it. That was what really appealed to me. I mean, I like shipping is shipping, so sometimes that's nice to chill out and just read a fanfic, but
The smut does not distract Becca.
I'm not in it for the
But what was really important, Becca, I remember Munchkin played a role, and that was the nickname we gave to your 1.5-year-old. What, it was 1.5, or how old was?
Yes, he was like, so if it came out in June of 2006, you said he would have been almost he would have been turning 2 around the time when our first episode came out.
And he was featured a couple of
Yes, he
times,
was.
right? Like, when we needed a cute little voice.
Yep, he had his debut on Snapecast when we did Snapes on a Plane, and we needed a baby to say mama. That's the Munchkin. Yep.
So that's such a great memory. So, like, I was more like Rachel. I was a student full time, but I was a PhD student. And so I want to say 20 years ago, I was 33. So I was really kind of Snape's age in a lot in the books because he was in his 30s throughout the series. So, like, he was kind of my stage of life. And I got into snaping because I was working on like my proposal for my dissertation and I was looking for an outlet. So I started re-listening to all the Harry Potter books on tape, right? Like while I was walking around or cleaning or whatever. And that was shortly before The Half-Blood Prince came out in 2005. And as I was rereading it and I knew the book was coming, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited for what's going to happen with Snape. And then, of course, The Half-Blood Prince, we have the way it ends, like, spoilers, Snape kills Dumbledore. And then the fandom was like divided, and we had the great Snape debate and everything. And I was like, oh my God, he's totally on the good side. How can anyone see otherwise? And I needed to find allies, but I really got caught up in all the discourse online. And then through LiveJournal, I saw a post from Rachel who's like, were you Che Che at the time?
I think
Or
I was Che Che at the time,
okay. And she was like, hey, who, Snape fans, who wants to get together for a podcast and talk about Snape? And I realized one of the things I love doing is arguing about the thing that I like when I become a fan. Like, I just have to talk about it. And so I'm like, I'm on board. Let me do this. And that became kind of a fun part of my life, but it was separate from my academic side. Like, I was Snaping on the down low because, on the other hand, I needed to like maintain my prestige and academic integrity around my professor and other people while I'm working on my dissertation, which was has nothing to do with Snape or fandom or anything literary. It was about error correction. So I was like, secretly Snaping. And then the rest of the time I was being a PhD student. And I got to meet you guys. It was so fun. It was great to have this outlet.
And I remember Megan was our youngest member of the Snape cast crew.
By far, I literally just graduated high school a month before I joined Snapecast. So, like, the babiest I could be.
I remember we actually had a discussion like, should we allow this young person on? I think if you had not been 18, the answer would have been no. So.
I felt very unqualified because I didn't see any of those, I didn't sign up for it. I listened to y'all's first episode and was like, oh, that's funny and cute. And I sent a piece of, fan mail. I didn't ask to be on the show, I don't think. I think we just You wrote back to me, and we realized we live close enough to meet up, and then it all just kind of snowballed from there.
Is my memory serving me correctly in that we were trying to find people who did not like Snape?
We were trying to find people who thought that Snape was
Was
evil,
evil,
but I
yeah.
don't think like Megan really, I think Megan was just not like as like rabidly, voraciously obsessed with Snape as the
Yeah.
rest of us were, and we thought she was like a little bit level-headed and was interested. You were very much a like Durmstrang person.
Yeah,
Yes.
Karkaroff.
Yeah.
Karkaroff, right?
I was like Snape. I was like, he's an interesting character, but he's not like, I'm not ride or die on him. So I think that was my balancing act that I did for the show. Like I was like Rebecca. I wasn't into like shipping him or anything
That's
like
right.
that. So.
Which is a kind of balance because others of us on here were definitely at the other end of the scale, like wubifying him or just, like over identifying.
Well, you know what? It takes all sorts. And I think that's part of what made the show kind of cohesive is that it wasn't just people agreeing with each other about everything all the time. We all had our own approaches.
Yeah, we definitely shipped him with different people. That was noticeable.
So such diversity in like the shipping. So yeah, that was a really special time. And we kept on it for 6 years. I think the only thing that kind of made us stop was life, but also like the series kind of wrapping up, and us all kind of like dispersing and doing our own things, moving, taking jobs, raising children. Would love to kind of catch up with folks to see like quickly what have you been doing in the last 20 years, like professionally, personally, fandom wise. And I'll start. Like I mentioned, I was in law school when the podcast started. I'm now a lawyer, and I think I started like I was very much an IP lawyer, and I think a lot of like what I talked about was intellectual property on the show. Since then, I found my jam of product counseling, which is basically just hanging out with product managers and engineers who typically build things very irresponsibly and make sure that they do it with some degree of caution so that they don't immediately get sent to jail. So I work in tech and it's a lot of fun. I've done a lot of different things. And what I've been doing for the last couple of years is leading and building teams of product counsel lawyers. And I think I learned a lot of like the key organizational skills that I implement today in terms of like how to have a culture of a team, how to document things, all of those basic skills I kind of like honed in our Snaping days. So I'm very thankful. The big news for me is that there are some parallels in that when we started Snapecast, I think we started when I was living in Houston, and then I pretty quickly moved to the Netherlands. And just as we're recording this today, I'm kind of on the precipice of a move to London. So it feels like kind of, history repeating itself a little bit for me.
That's exciting, though. That's really exciting.
Shannon, what about you?
Okay. So, a little bit like you, mentioning moving around happened a lot in my life. So, when I started snaping, I was a student. 20 years later, now I'm actually a full professor. So, I've really advanced in my career.
I don't know if that was an appropriate
It is a
reaction.
different, yes, you should be impressed. It's a lot of work. But it's so what we'll say is like I'm a more senior person in my field and I'm more established. But what's been interesting is that after I was in Pennsylvania, that's where in Philly where I got my PhD, I got my first job, a tenure line job in Texas. So I wasn't too far from where you had been, Rachel, but you'd since left Texas by the time I got there. Then I went to Sweden and I had the opportunity to start doing things like bringing fan fiction into the classroom. So I started to really draw on my fan experience in my research. So whereas as a student, I kept my life really bifurcated, like the secret fangirl and then the serious, PhD student. But in Sweden, I was kind of in a position where I was able to really merge the two. And so since then, that's been a big part of my research where I've looked at fan practices for language learning and teaching. And I integrate fan fiction into my classes. And when I was in Sweden, I actually even had my students reading Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone and writing Harry Potter fan fiction.
Love it.
It's cool. But what's happened now, even more exciting, is I now have a book coming out. I just finished writing a book that's all about fan practices and fan fiction for language teaching and learning, based on all the work I've been doing since, since I began Snaping, truly. And I give a shout out in the first chapter to my origin, my villain arc. how it started with, my love of Snape and being a podcaster with you guys. So like that's also influenced not just my research, but other skills. Like I realize I do a lot of online collaboration now, but Snapecast was my very first experience with online collaboration where, you develop a product with a team of people remotely situated and you're using, internet mediated technologies to collaborate and do this stuff. And now that's a part of my everyday work, but I developed it as a fan. And yeah, so I'm very excited about my book and like my Snaping, my being a fan is connected with my scholarship now.
Oh my God, that's so cool. Becca, what about you?
So when we started, I only had the one child and I had another one.
I think you had your second during Snapecast because I remember us giving you shit about what you named her.
Yeah. Well, she's named after her great grandmother, but her great grandmother's name happened to be Lillian, so we do call her Lily. That is complete coincidence. It is. So we started in 2006. In 2008, we purchased a home. We moved the next county over where we have lived since. I think it was 2010 when I started working at the library. And for the library system, I worked at one branch for 8 years and then got a promotion to the main library where I worked after that. And just last year, I started going to library school. So
Wait, so you're a student now. The rest of us have
I'm a
stopped.
student. I'm a student now. Yeah, I held out as long as I could. I'm just over halfway through. I'll be a year from now, I'll have my MLIS.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
And how old is the munchkin now?
Joshua just graduated from college, so he's 21. He's about to be
He can
22.
drink now. Oh my
Yeah.
God.
Yep. We took him to a bar for his 21st birthday.
Oh my God.
And my daughter Lily is 13. She'll be 14 in June as well. So those are some pretty big milestones. And yeah, that's funny that I'm a student now. The same as my children.
Megan, what about you?
Oh man, I have way less interesting of a story than y'all's. I think I said this when we were talking earlier, but I've kind of like pulled back from the internet the older I get. Like I don't do social media. I don't engage in like I've been in fandoms for the last 20 years, but I really don't engage like to the level that I used to. Like I don't really go to conventions or keep up with all the happenings, especially now that it's all like fandom has moved to social media mostly. Like, it's not really a forum culture anymore. It's like you gotta
No.
be in the right Discord and follow the right people on
Right.
Twitter and all this stuff. And I don't want to deal with any of that. So, I mean, I've bounced around a lot in the last 20 years, but I'm not really comfortable putting my life out on the internet. So I'm not gonna get too specific about it.
I'm not down with the social media stuff either, so I do get left behind a little bit, but I totally get that because I've also pulled back a little bit from fandom and stuff just it's a different season of life, right? Like it happens to everybody, so.
Well, it's funny because I feel like I very much had pulled back from fandom. I was sort of like nostalgic for the forum culture of back in the day, nostalgic for in-person conventions. And I kind of stepped away from fandom. I got really fanish about like super mainstream things. Like I'm a huge fan of the show Survivor and obsessively like catalog and watch that. And then was also like, I was getting my smut from mainstream too. I was reading A Court of Thrones and Roses and like Fourth Wing and all the romanticy stuff. But, late 2025, gay hockey show came on and pulled me back into fandom. And so now I find myself again in the corridors of AO3
Yes.
looking for exactly that perfect fic.
And you are such an enabler, Rachel, because you looped me into that. You're like, have you seen Heated Rivalry? You should get into Heated. I have not seen Heated Rivalry yet, but I have read all the books and I want all the fic now. Thank you very much.
We were talking earlier about how Rachel is a fandom pusher.
Oh, I am. Yeah.
You're the one who got me into watching Supernatural, which I never did. And they're like, I can't believe you haven't watched it yet. And then I sat down and watched every single episode. So thank you.
That is such a Rachel thing to say.
I was such a pusher for Heated Rivalry that I actually like hosted an IRL party for like eight people that hadn't seen it before. We did like a marathon watch. I had themed drinks. I had like, all of that stuff, which it actually it's funny because I'm kind of known for doing themed drink parties. And when I think about like the first time that I got into that, it was actually Lumos. Like I would, one of the reasons Lumos was such a cool fan-ish thing for me was it was the first convention I went to, and the first time you got to meet like so many people that you just knew online, and it was at this like very pivotal point in Harry Potter fandom where everything was just going on, and there was so much attention and creativity, and people were like unabashedly fan-ish in a space that I just didn't expect because everything was separated back there. It was very much about keeping the two streams separate. And I remember that there was like a super casual meetup at one of the, it was like an Irish pub that was in the casino hotel kind of thing. Nothing special, but I loved the fact that for it, they had some like themed drinks. I don't even remember what they were, but I was like, this is so cool. I'm going to do this at every possible thing I can. And it became kind of like a trademark thing for me.
So that's what's inspired your special drinks. Because that is something you do when you party, when you have like a little dinner or event. That is really your
It
hallmark.
is true. And I also will maintain that there are things about Heated Rivalry that I like because they have things in common with Snape. Shannon doesn't believe me, but I think Ilya Rozanov is a Snapey character
He
because.
is hilarious and snarky, and I will acknowledge that both he and Snape had shitty fathers and traumatic upbringings. But beyond that, I'm a little bit skeptical. Like, 'cause one of them is a tragic guy, and the other one is like a marshmallow.
Marshmallow. Okay, we'll have to talk about that later. But I think that a lot of what makes me like reading Snape, like how witty he is, how clever he is, like that's why I read Ilya. And like that's why I like seek him out is for exactly those reasons. And also, they're both really good at mind reading. Like Ilya has like the gaydar in all the books where he can tell who all the couples are. So, if Snape were a hockey player, he'd be doing exactly the same thing.
I'm trying to picture Snape playing hockey.
Sure, someone's written that fic. AU Snape hockey
Oh
fic.
my God, crossover.
I don't know if I can see him doing hockey. I think he's more of a figure skating guy.
No, he tried riding that broom and didn't do a very good job. So,
you guys, Snape is 100% a goalie. Like the 100% like blocking the spells. Plus, like goalies are always a little kinky. It's totally true.
This is goalie lore.
So I just talked a little bit about Lumos, which brought back a lot of memories, and thought it would be nice to just go around and share some of our memories of Snaping in the Golden Age.
Well, I'll start. One of my favorite memories was Rachel getting slammed by Snape up against the wall at a convention.
Which Snape?
Droxy.
Droxy, yes. It was Droxy, and you were in your full latex. And I just, that was an eye opener.
Yeah, I did used to do latex Snape, and I don't, sadly, that outfit completely tore because that's what happens to latex eventually.
So I want to say my favorite, or one of my favorite Snape memories, also goes back to Lumos, which was our first time, I want to say, that we came together because we'd started snaping earlier that year. Was it in March when you sent out that first email to be like, who wants to put a podcast together? And then, so we had several months where we were collaborating, and then we made all these plans because we knew that Lumos was going to be how we're going to like launch our podcast, right? So we had like lip balm. And then you mentioned, I'd forgotten about this. We were talking earlier, stickers that we had put on condoms that said protect your one, right? Which I still have one, not for use, but more for like nostalgia.
I hope not for use after 20 years. Condom technology probably has gotten
But
better.
like it was so fun to be in a space where you were with people that you had only collaborated with online, and then you could spend time together, and then meeting other people, like other cosplayers. Like you mentioned Roxy, who I think we met at a later con, but Logos Pilgrim, and they're kind of really, what's the term? Spiritual Snape. You know how they would offer you a warm embrace and stuff, and I really loved seeing the
Almost
different.
like Orthodox
Yeah,
Snape.
yeah. And but like also the debates that were around the fandom and the themes at the time were different. And also, I have to say this because I remember a lot of us were shippers, and not all of us, and a number of us were slash shippers. And I remember some of the conversations that were being had at the conventions were almost like dismissive of shipping and anti-slash, like as if that was disrespectful to the source text. And I remember that being like a take that angered a lot of people. And it's funny now because I think, oh, that wouldn't, it seems stupid to have that kind of conversation now. Like someone to say that now, it just seems like naive and immature and kind of old-fashioned. But it was present, as was the whole Snape debate. So there was like a lot of opinions that were fresh. There were people trying to, speculate, like speculation was rife, but it was so fun to like come together. And if you were going to argue about a fic or what was happening in the story or Snape's best qualities or where he was most fuckable, I don't know. Like just it was kind of it was fun. It was so unique coming to a space like that. So that's like what I'm, it was a really special experience.
Yeah, all my best memories are from the conventions we did every summer as well. And I think that's partly because in my opinion, it was like the golden age of fan conventions. It was right before they all started to get really, really corporatized. They were, still fan run by fan, fans would just make an LLC and run a convention and lose a bunch of money. Like it wasn't this big like corporate production like they are now. And also because it was pre social media as we think of it currently, it was a big deal to like meet people in person and put names to like faces to usernames and be like, oh, you're that person that we've had that thread on that forum going for like 2 years now. I guess nowadays you can just shoot off a Twitter message or you see each other on TikTok or whatever. And it's sort of, I think modern social media gives sort of an illusion of in-person community, but it was very different back then when you had to wait all year for that one weekend in the summer when you can actually see these people.
Yeah, it's interesting that you brought up the mainstreaming of fandom, Megan, because in the last 5 years, pretty much the only conventions I've gone to have been like the big, like I've spoken at a few panels at San Diego Comic-Con or like Emerald City Comic-Con. It's like these big giant things. And I know that like small ones still go on. Like I think Escapade still goes on, but that you it used to be like nearly every convention was fan run.
Yeah, I remember what was the name of the convention in Florida when we went to the Wizarding World?
Infinitus, I think.
Infinitus, yeah.
Yeah,
That
that
was
sounds right.
really the first convention that I was like, oh, like you kind of got a sense of this is the way that it was heading. And you heard from like just regular comic book convention fans and stuff that like Comic-Con in Los Angeles was going that way. And I knew from experience that Dragon Con in Atlanta
Yeah.
started getting, like the very corporatized flavor. And I'm like, I agree with you, Megan. Like I really liked it when it was like just fans coming together and talking about, whatever interests them. So yeah, it's a little bit sad.
But Rachel, you went to a more fan-oriented convention when you went to Sectus. That was still relatively fan-run, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny when I think about like the timeline of the mainstreaming of fandom, I feel like the first sign of it was actually at Phoenix Rising in New Orleans when MTV did they like went to the this they had this party that was like an open bar party that you could like get into, and I think they were trying to film like Wizards Gone Wild or something. I don't know. But it was super weird. I don't think they got what out of it what they wanted to, but I think that was kind of like mainstream media trying to like poke its way in there. And then like, with like when we had a lot of when we did the Infinitus in Florida, there's so much of like it's the rights holders and those kinds of connections. But Sectus was a convention for the last book, completely fan run, and that's definitely one of my best memories because it was literally like, you know, getting in a giant line, waiting for the book to be released at midnight. Everyone's dressed up. I met up with Chris for the first time, and we walked around with a handheld recorder of some sort because you couldn't record on your phone because the iPhone had just come out and wasn't that reliable. And there were like, you know, people screaming spoilers down the streets because I don't know if y'all remember the Carpet book, but like for those who don't. It basically the final Harry Potter book got leaked, and someone took a photo of all of the pages on this like really ugly carpet, and some people chose to consume that book that they'd been waiting like years, sometimes you know decades over about a decade for, chose to consume it in that way. I was the anti-carpet book, but the other, you know, the convention was great because you could get the book and go and read it in a reading room that was cozy with a lot of other folks where everyone had to be quiet, but you could like run out and squee in the hall, or you could like take it back to your hotel room and like dive into the book and not talk to anyone until you were done digesting it. And I just can't think of anything like I know that there are these really big like get-togethers for like people said Sarah J. Maas is like her get-togethers for her releases are like bigger and better than Harry Potter, but like I don't know. I'll try going to one for the next book, but I doubt they're as fun.
I want to do something for the next Heated Rivalry book. But Megan and I did this. So when the Deathly Hallows came out, we actually went to a midnight release, I think at the Barnes and Nobles in Philadelphia, and you stayed over, and we were in costumes, dressed up, and so that was kind of like it was a personal thing because at this point we were both in the same city. Or nearby. So that was kind of fun. Like, I guess I don't need like a big party. Part of it is standing in line with other people geeking out as you're waiting for the countdown and you're in costume. And then when you get that book, right? You it's like, "Oh my God, what happened?" And you're like tearing through it.
Any other memories folks want to share?
I have one I don't know if I can share it. You might have to cut it out. And I don't remember which convention this is, so someone let me know. What was the con where we were all sharing a room? Because at that con, I was drinking and someone gave me a weed brownie and I like fell asleep on the bathroom floor and someone tripped over me trying to go to the bathroom at like 6 in the morning.
I don't know, but I did not give you a weed brownie.
This is a good memory.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember which convention it was. Like, was it the Dallas one? Was it the Orlando one?
But why is this a good state memory?
It's just fun. Like when you ask me what was fandom culture like in the mid-2000s, I think of like partying with your friends and like talking to people who are just as passionate about the nerdy stuff as you are, and like just being in spaces where like everyone gets it, right? There's nobody who's like there to gawk or like doesn't know what's going on. It's just like 200 people who all are locked in and get it.
So you could really let loose with drinking or with other substances, and you felt safe and happy and slept on the bathroom floor.
Yeah, I mean, like today, if Megan did that, she would be like Instagram storied and there would be like passed out, Megan,
I don't know.
feeling
That's not that
shameful.
interesting for an Instagram. I think she'd have to do something. Like sleeping passed out is not interesting.
Well, if I was like making a really stupid face in my sleep, I could be a meme, you know, take a picture and caption it.
Yeah, you're right that the role of social media has changed how we experience a lot of things. I enjoy a lot of it, but I could see how I know people got to explore parts of themselves that they kept separate. And this we were mentioning this before too, how we used alternate identities in our fan, like, if our LiveJournal account, we didn't use our full name or something like that. And maybe certain people were very careful about not having photographs or, because their jobs may have been jeopardized by them being involved with certain kinds of activities. Like just, I can agree, like being a fan was not it was suspicious. It was not understood the same way it is now, where I think people can see it as these are people. It's like going to Ren Faire, which maybe seems a little fruity for some people, but it's also like they're just having fun dressed up in costumes and who cares. But in the past, maybe 20 years ago, people did care. It would matter. And so you're right that you would feel safe. Like people would take po photos and post them on like what, a Flickr or something. You know, there wasn't, it wasn't, there was no TikTok. There was none of that.
It would be like a locked live journal post where you had to already be in the group to see it.
Yeah, there are no safe spaces like that really online today that I'm aware of. Although I will occasionally post in my lab journal and feel like it's a nice, quiet, pristine corner of the internet owned by the Russians.
Are you up there posting about Ilya Rosanov?
It kind of makes me wonder how much current culture has, how much it owes to the Harry Potter fandom, because I think about shows like Big Bang Theory and stuff that made geek culture and going to conventions and stuff more relatable and cool. And we were before that. We were way before that. Like just the Harry Potter fandom.
Yeah, we were talking earlier about how I think Harry Potter was like the last big monoculture fandom because it was before social media fractured everybody into like different places to go. Like it used to be like, I don't know, it's hard to describe if you weren't there, but it's like that was the last time that a fandom was like that big and that universal. And I don't think that'll ever happen again. Like even, you know, when things get big and they have in the last 20 years, it never gets to Harry Potter level. And I think it's just, there's so much media to consume. We have access to so much more of it now with streaming. You know, fandom is fractured in that it's all over different social medias and you have to know where to go and plug in that way. It wasn't a one-stop shop like it used to be in the forum times. I don't think we'll ever see a fandom that is as big and unified as Harry Potter ever again.
Like I've always been a fan. I met my husband at a Star Wars chat room. I mean, I think I've got street cred when it comes to being a fan and being involved in fandoms. I have been since I was a child, but there was something different about Harry Potter fandom. And I don't think it was just that it was a little bit more female centric than maybe like Star Wars or Star Trek has been historically. I mean, maybe that was part of it, but I don't think that's the whole story. It was just a very unique time.
The Harry Potter books, and I mentioned they're books, which is different from TV shows or movies. One of the things that we also saw, like they're a touchstone for people who were growing up, like children at that time, because they started as children's novels and then moved into young adult. So they were used to facilitate or encourage reading. And some of the other media that, like, I'm talking about, you know, Rachel and I are joking around about Heated Rivalry, which is also a book series. But that's not something you would introduce children to because it's dealing with adults. It's about, you know, romance and sexual themes, which is fine for certain age people. But the Harry Potter books, I think, they had a whole range of characters across the lifespan. Like if you think about Dumbledore, if you think about Snape, the Marauder generation, you know, and Harry, and like you have kids, teachers, and even older senior people who are all very active in society. So it was special in that regard because I think it could be shared by a lot of people. Whereas, like a lot of stuff that we'll see on HBO or even Netflix, some of that is going to be adult only. It's also subscription based, so it's harder to get access to if you don't pay for it or your family doesn't or you don't know how to like bootleg it. Whereas books you could check out from the library. And I don't think people are. There isn't the same movement towards reading novels right now. This is maybe also pointing to the role of technology in our life, where we're reading a lot more stuff that's digitized and maybe shortened because of the size of our screen on our phone or our attention spans, what's going to keep us interested. So I also think that makes Harry Potter unique because it was a book series that we were getting all sorts of generations to read.
Yeah, Harry Potter fandom really was a special time, and it was able to bring so many people together. And one of the people that I definitely think about when I think about Snaping and Snape cast, who couldn't be here with us today, is Rose. And just wanted to honor her memory. She passed away a few years ago, and I know those of us in the Snape fandom that got to know her just really like cherished her. She was such a unique individual. My best memory of her, and I think like what She's known for a lot of things, but I think she was the very first person to ever cosplay the grain underpants as the complete outfit. Like it was like she showed up in this like gray outfit and I was like, what is that? And she's like, it's an underpants. But then since then people have done it, but Rose was the first. And she just always had that like witty sense of her humor where she could take something like kind of like sad and turn it into something like witty. And I love that about her.
Something I'll always cherish about Rose is the very first time I met her, which was only like a month after I joined the show. It was at Lumos, and I went to, I think it was your hotel room, Rachel, and we were all hanging out and talking, getting to know each other. And Rose had spread out a whole bunch of these little like perfume samples all over the bedspread. And I, 18-year-old, not really into perfume at all, had no idea what it was. And she was explaining to me who the company was and all these cool different scents they had. And she let me smell them. And I thought it was just so neat. And to this day, 20 years later, that's still the brand of perfume that I wear.
That is so funny. I still have the Lady Gaga lipstick that Rose sent me when it came out, the Lady Gaga MAC lipstick.
I love that lipstick.
Phoenix, the perfume is Black Phoenix Alchemy, right? They did a line called Snape's Underpants, or it wasn't a line, it was like one scent called Snape's Underpants. And they gave me a little sample of it because they're like, oh, you're the Snape person. And I've saved it. And in the course of packing, I found it. And it's still, I mean, it smells good. It's not smelling like underpants, but so it's obviously aged well.
What does it smell like?
It's kind of like, I mean, it's a little musky, right? Like that's what you'd want it. It's like an amber musk sort of
I was
thing.
thinking like soap, but no. No, that wouldn't work.
It's the other way, Becca.
I have several memories of Rose that come to mind whenever I think of her. Related to the show in particular, she recorded the dialogue, the text that of a commercial, one of our fake commercials that I wrote. It was for like Nimbus 2000 or something. And I had to listen to it a bunch of times because I was splicing in the music and everything. And just like it was so perfect. A more like personal moment for me and Rose is, I think it was it Portis that was in
I
Dallas?
think so.
I think we got to the hotel around the same time while we were waiting for everybody. We went and had a meal together, just the two of us, and that was a really special moment for me because we hadn't really talked outside of Snapecast before, and so that was very special to me. I miss her a lot.
My memory of Rose is kind of more a compilation memory of her. And I said at the beginning of this podcast that when I started snaping, I was 33. So 20 years later, that means I'm 53. So I'm kind of like a fandom elder now when you think about it. And I know that when Snapecast came together, like you're hearing, we're all different ages, but I don't know Rose's exact age, but I want to say she was closer to my age now. And one of the things I really loved was how unapologetically squeeful she was about Snape and her place in the fandom. I never once heard her talk about, like, I'm too old for this. I should really grow up. And that was not something she ever voiced. She enjoyed being alongside the rest of us. She had like she was like Snarky's favorite, Snarky the owl. She,
She was always feeding him.
yeah. Yeah, seriously. That's why he was so fat. Like she was feeding him. But she rolled with everything. She shipped things. She was sarcastic about things. She was critical. She caused, like, yes, the graying underpants. She never apologized for being too old to be playing. And like I keep thinking, like, I want to be Rose when I grow up. And now I am growing up. So I love her. There are discourses in fan spaces where you'll see people expressing discomfort about older fans, where younger fans may say, haven't you outgrown this? Shouldn't you be with your grandchildren as if every woman has children or grandchildren? And so there's a lot of ageism that rolls around still. And that wasn't something that Rose ever acknowledged. You know, she didn't let that stop her. She was so unapologetically snaping all the time. You know, like she snaped in her sleep. I swear she snaped constantly. And I loved it. So like I want to be like Rose.
I love that. Like thinking just like next time I'm too old for this kind of funk, I'm gonna be like, what would Rose do?
Yes. She would put on her graying underpants.
Yes. So, looking towards the future, I thought we could round this out with some predictions. So would love to hear from everyone in terms of like Snaping in the future. What will it be like? Where will we be? You can go 10 years out, you can go 20 years out, interpret it as you will.
I'm only going to go 10 years out. If that's okay, because I think like I have this book coming out, and so I'm going to say that it's going to be well received. I'm going to give talks on it. I already have doctoral students working with me doing research on fan fiction in different language classrooms. It's going to be my legacy. I don't know what fandom I'll be in 10 years from now, but I'm sure it will have connections to Snape. So I want to say, like, I will still be being professorial and grading students and thinking of them as dunderheads when they do silly things. So Snape will always be a part of me. And so I'll be secretly Snaping in that way. And I think always fangirling on some level.
I have no predictions because I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow, never mind in 10 years. So, and I have no idea what fandom culture is going to look like in another 10 years. I do this call this a hopeful prediction, but I think with like the rise of AI and stuff, I hope there's going to be more of a grassroots like return to origins for fandom culture. I think people are going to start to miss, you know, because for me, fandom culture is all about, you know, interacting with other people and like getting new viewpoints, and you know, you're all passionate about the same thing, but you approach it from totally different angles, and so you can talk to people for hours and come away with something new, like that connection, meeting of minds. I think people are going to start to want that and seek that out again, the more AI slop gets pushed on us. So fingers crossed for a return to grassroots fandom.
That's perfect.
I mean, there is some evidence of that, like the sales of cassette tapes and vinyl are going up in a way that they haven't before. There, I think some of the youth are rejecting the AI.
Well, that's perfect for me because like I've long said that my retirement plan is to start writing full time. So
When we all have universal basic income in the future.
Well, I'm getting my MLIS degree, so I'm going to be a librarian for a while, but when my plan for when I retire and I have more time on my hands is I am going to devote like treat writing like my job in a way that I haven't been able to for, a lot of my life, and I really miss it. The one and only book length fanfic that I ever wrote was a Snape related fanfic, and I never published it.
Oh, what would Rose do?
I remember the way that I felt when I was writing it, and I was like, this is what I want to do someday. And so that's my prediction for the future is I'm going to take that inspiration from my Snapey fic and try to capture that feeling again, not just of like the writing, but also like just the investment in characters and the story. And yeah, maybe, and like Megan said, if I can encourage other people to care about something the way that we all cared about Snape, then that would be amazing.
Yeah, I agree because it does sometimes feel like a dark time in the world for a whole host of reasons. But I think that there's something really special about fanish culture and people coming together organically in a way that like is not automated. And I'm hoping that even as fandom, I think before we return to those grassroots roots, and really like start fostering human connection, I think we are going to see fandom get bigger. I was talking with a friend last week about how heated rivalry is getting so big and so mainstream. And like you never really would have thought it would have existed 20 years ago. Like if you had told all of us that like there was a show that had all of these fan fiction tropes that was like created by a fan who helped hone her craft in the course of participating in fandom, and that that show like broke records in terms of like the finale that rivaled Breaking Bad and went on to like catapult the careers of actors and the writers. Like we never would have thought of it. But I think like Harry Potter played a huge part in that. Like a lot of people have said like queer as folk walked so heated rivalry could run. And I think Harry Potter is like in there. And I think though things are going to keep getting bigger. And I was discussing with a friend what will come first, mainstream Omegaverse or mainstream Mpreg. And I'm voting for mainstream Mpreg.
I am, yes, we have to, when we release our next episode in 10 years, we'll have to revisit
Yeah,
this.
we'll see which one came true.
We always used to do the question we would ask everyone in Snapecast that we interviewed, and frequently our like question on the street was like, is it boxers or briefs, the gray underpants and why? So is everyone still, has anyone changed their view, by the way? Were you a boxers person and now you're a brief person, or we're all consistent on that?
Gosh, I can't remember what I used to claim, but I think I used to draw him in briefs. So I must have been a briefs person. Briefs are more fun to draw.
I'm gonna vote briefs.
I never had it. I don't think I ever answered that question or even really considered it.
It's funny because I listened to the episode where we talk about it's in episode one, and like you refused to talk about it, Megan. So it's really good walking down memory lane with y'all and thinking about the future. It wouldn't be an episode of Snapecast without a medley. So I'm going to turn it over to some of the folks that we talked about in the fanish community to share their memories of Snape and Snape casting in a segment we're calling Snaping for Eternity. Happy Snaping, everyone.
Happy
Happy
Snaping.
Snaping.
Happy Snaping.
I said, saddle up, cowboy, I'm waiting for you. Won't you give it up?
This is Emma Grant from First Slash Cast and later the Three Patch Podcast, here to wish Snapecast a very happy 20th anniversary. So I have to admit, I was never really a huge Snape fan, but over the years, I came to understand his character and appreciate the role he plays in the series, especially after reading Lori Kim's excellent book about Snape. Go check it out, highly recommended. My first memory of Snape cast was meeting Rachel at the Lumos conference in Las Vegas in the summer of 2006, where we were on a podcasting panel together. During that panel, we learned that we had each started our respective podcasts for the exact same reason. We wanted to make podcasts that wholeheartedly celebrated fandom and fan works, prioritizing fans and their creativity above everything else. 20 years later, with the author having showed us what a horrible person she is, I think that's an important legacy. Thanks for all the snaping, Snapecast.
Hi, this is Lori Kim, and my Snapiest memory is being on a panel called Vladimir Snape, Snapecast, and Snape with Rachel and the late Vladimir Nigel Taylor, the legendary Snape cosplayer. It was Leviosa in 2016. Rachel ran Snapecast, Nigel embodied Snape, and I was launching my book, Snape, A Definitive Reading, so the snapiness in that room was off the charts.
Hi, I'm Madame Snape. My Snapiest memory is probably going to be at Portus when we had Roxy as Severus Snape doing that potion class, making the bath bombs. Absolutely fantastic, and I'll remember it probably for the rest of my days. My first Harry Potter convention, so very much as a core memory.
Oh, baby, you are such a wild child.
Hi, I'm Samtastic, and my snappiest memory is all the wonderful community that was built surrounding his character. From the cons, to the amazing cosplayers, to the fanfic, the fandom surrounding Snape will always hold a very special place in my heart. Hashtag Snarry forever!